Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people, some well-known and others not as much, navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them a curve. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, the bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve. These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and flourish. I hope you enjoy The Bend and add it to your subscriptions. And if you need help with your own personal navigation and are in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2 Manage Vets Consulting. Now enjoy The Bend and be inspired by our amazing guest. Welcome.
There we go. All right. Well, welcome everyone to this version of The Bend. Really excited about my guest today. We actually have never met in person. We met on LinkedIn, just reaching out to each other because we are both professional speakers. And in fact, Bridget is a speaker coach, and she's going to get her own podcast, and I'm going to listen to it because I want to learn how to be a better speaker from her. But she is an award-winning international speaker. She's a Forbes contributor. She is a Leadership Network member with Entrepreneur. She's the owner of BMAC Talks Press. She has an independent publishing company. She is the founder and owner of BMAC Talks Academy. Well, she helps professionals monetize their expertise and reach others with their voices of expertise. So I am excited to have you here, Bridget. Thank you for being on The Bend.
Thank you, Debbie. Really excited to have this conversation with you.
Well, as you know, our theme for The Bend is all about those bends in the road. And we've had a couple of conversations and you invited me on your podcast. And some of the conversations we had were off camera. About just some of the things that life threw at us. So let's just talk about your career. And I guess when we're all young, we all decide what we want to do. And then that changes. Sometimes it changes 100 times and sometimes it never does. So when you started out in life, kind of where were you headed? Because I know that you have a communication degree.
Well, you know, I did not have this definitive plan or definitive idea as a child as to what it was I wanted to be when I grew up, but I knew I wanted to do something professional. I wanted to be some kind of professional because I grew up in a home with blue collar parents, and I knew I did not want to do the work that they did, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. So the obvious quote unquote professional job was being a secretary. That sounded glamorous. And then it moved to maybe being a lawyer. That sounded pretty sexy. I had no idea, but I just knew I wanted to do something where I was sitting in an air-conditioned building, dressed up every day, carrying a little attaché case. I even had an attaché case in college. I did not have a backpack. Classmates made fun of me. I did not wear jeans and t-shirts. I wore suits and skirts and blouses to class. So I just knew I wanted to be a professional, and I always modeled myself as a professional as best I could. I always loved reading and writing and getting in front of an audience. Speaking at any time was never a problem. You should have seen me as a kid as the church school secretary at our little country Methodist church. I just would sit and go through over in my head exactly how I was going to give my report. It was the same report every Sunday. The only thing that changed, right, was the scripture.
Here's how much money is in the budget. Here's how much money we need.
Right. And what the offering was, you know. But I would sit there and really think about how I was going to say it and where I was going to pause and what smile I might have. I was ridiculous, Debbie. So I was all over, but I knew I wanted to be a professional. I knew I needed to do something with my voice because that was super comfortable for me. And I knew that I needed to be in an air-conditioned building with my attaché case or my computer bag.
Well, and you live in Arizona, so that air-conditioned office is really, really important. And I live in South Carolina, and it's pretty important where I live too. So I totally get that.
It was even more important growing up as a kid. I grew up in Southeast Texas, where it's hot and humid.
Yes. Absolutely. That is some of the thickest humidity I have ever visited is when I was down in Friendswood around Houston, down around that area. Yeah. And rains there all the time. And then the sun comes out and it just creates this lovely sauna. So how did you, I have to tell you, I love the fact that you dressed up to go to class in college, because I did too. My mom was a clothes horse, and I can remember just from, very young age, she always had copies and still does. She's 87 and still gets Vogue magazine. So I'm not the clothes horse that she was, but that was kind of drilled into my head. And so I would, every now and then, walking to class, I would dress up. And, everybody else looked like, kind of course, I grew up in the 60s, 70s. Everybody looked like a hippie except me. And people would stare at you like, what is wrong with you? Why? But you know what? It's you dress for the job you want, not the job you have, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it's what makes you happy. It's what makes you feel good. It's what made you feel confident walking across campus. I mean, you didn't want to blend in. This is who you are.
Right. Exactly. And we both discussed the fact that we are both extroverts. And so being a wallflower is not in our nature for either of us. And so we just don't mind, sticking out a little bit compared to what some people.
I have a confession, Debbie. I'm not an extrovert.
Oh.
And I know you said that the last time we talked, and I just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Because people really think that I am one. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
Are you a learned extrovert?
I am. Let's see. I know how to turn it on when I need to turn it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our DISC personality profiles are get her done. That's, some compliance. Yeah, some compliance, because it's the details. And then the extroverted I comes out when we need to stand in front of an audience and turn it on. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, there's not much S in me. I don't know about you, but my S is very low in my DISC personality profile, the touchy-feely stuff. I don't do it well.
Yeah, we're on the same page there.
Yeah. I would bet we probably have really similar personality profiles when we get right down to looking at it.
Oh, hands down.
Yeah. So on this path to being a professional woman, what was, how do you achieve that? How did you maneuver to get where you are?
Right. A lot of observation, Debbie, to be honest with you, a lot of observation, because where I grew up, it was a very small town. And of course, there were professionals there, but just not a ton of them. And it was, small town, population 5,019 at the time. I'm sure, maybe 1,000 more people are there now. I don't know. But, the majority of the people were working class, high school degree, diploma, if you will. Of course, the teachers and administrators were college educated. There's a few attorneys and a few other professionals. So for me, it was a lot of observation, because it wasn't close enough to me, close enough to my circle to be able to reach out to someone and see that person and model that person in my family. Yes, there were professionals in my family, but not a lot of them where I grew up. They lived in the big city, Houston, and that was about 90 miles away, and I would see them a few times a year at some family event or another. So I didn't see a lot of professional people, so I would observe from a distance and quietly observe and take notes. And if I had questions about something, I would just quietly do the research on my own and just try to figure it out for myself. I don't have any one particular role model. I tell people that everybody I come across is a role model. I can learn something from everybody, whether it's the way you talk, the way you carry yourself, the way you follow up, the way you engage, the way you listen, the way you learn, the way you write. I can get that from anybody, the postal worker, the grocery store clerk, it doesn't matter. So for me, that road to professionalism was one of a lot of observation, a lot of introspection, a lot of research, and deciding who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. And how do I want other people to feel when they are around me?
Yeah. Now, I know that you obviously met your goal because you are a businesswoman, an entrepreneur, a speaker coach. You've written books, and we're going to talk about some of your books. But how did you, it's going through life. I know you told me on one of our conversations, you had just this job that you just loved. And it was just your dream job. And how did life throw you a curveball there?
It was a curve bomb, okay? Debbie, I loved this position I had with an educational technology company. What it was a publishing company, but in the 21st century, it had to make the digital shift. And students are buying not textbooks, but ebooks and so on. So it was a textbook company turned ebook company, if you will. So calls it an educational technology company or ed tech company. And I was part of the smartest team on the planet. Each one of us had I'm serious. These people were so smart and still are smart, but oh my God. And it was smarts coupled with personality, because you know, I have some people, there are some people, Debbie, where they're book smart, but yeah, then they have the personality of a dial tone. That was not the case with this group. And each one had this wonderful wit and passion and oh my gosh. At any rate, we traveled the country. Each one of us had a territory. My territory was out west. That's why I had to move from Texas to Arizona. We could have moved anywhere out west, but my husband and I chose Arizona. At any rate, we each had a territory. There were about 10, 12 of us. And every Thursday, we were likely on a plane going somewhere to a college or a university to do a workshop, a faculty development workshop on how do you engage the 21st century learner. Or when I started that job back in 2009, we were in the middle of that economic downturn. Yes. So you had a lot of baby boomers and Gen Xers returning to the classroom. So we would do workshops on how do you engage two or three different generations in the same classroom, just how to be an effective faculty member at the college level. And that's what all of us did. We would tell folks, I teach professors how to teach. That was our job. And I loved that job. That's when I found out that this professional speaking thing is really my jam. And, you know, the company went through a lot of change. And there was a lot of reorganization and a lot of changes. And the next thing you know, my team on June 30th of 2015 got word that we were being disbanded. The company kept four of us, let everybody else go. We were so sad. We were up in the middle of the night on text, crying and texting each other. We really liked each other. We were a team where we didn't just work together, but we liked each other. We went to each other's weddings. We went to each other's events and cheered each other on. You know, one was in North Carolina, one in Connecticut. I was out in Arizona. Somebody was in Atlanta. So we were all over. Somebody was in Kansas. Two were in Texas. One was in Michigan. Another one was in Ohio. We would cheer each other on. Somebody's kids graduating from college. Somebody's kids getting married. Somebody's having a baby. The team even gave me a baby shower. They threw me a baby shower. Yeah. They purposely had an event out in Scottsdale, and because we had three national events each year. And so one of the events was in Scottsdale, and before the event, the day before, they were like, let's do a baby shower for Bridget. So anyway, we loved each other. But on June 30th, 2015, we're on the phone texting each other. Like, I just kind of randomly reached out. It's like 11 o'clock my time. So something like, you know, 1 a.m. Some of the team members are like, is anybody else up? I'm just in disbelief. And then all of a sudden everybody starts responding. Yeah, I'm up too. I'm still crying. So anyway, the company let all of us go except for four. I was one of the four they kept. They gave us a new job description, job title, manager. And 9 months later, I didn't have another baby. 9 months later, they got rid of all of us, including that new manager who had been at the company for 15 years and she was a VP. But change happens. So that was April of 2016. And I'm sitting there with a two-year-old. He's just getting ready to turn two. My husband and I are just kind of like, OMG. Like, what now? And the what now was me just taking the professional speaking business full throttle, going all in.
So what was the scariest part of that? Because I know, you know, I've been in that similar situation when 2008 hit, my job was eliminated and I was laid off. And then you think, okay, well, I was well known in my profession. I could get a job anywhere, but nobody was hiring at that point in time because nobody was doing any business. So that's when I started my consulting business. But it was scary to do that. So how was that for you to just take that leap of faith and go?
It was incredibly scary. I think it would not have been as scary had we not had our son. But I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, it's not just my husband and me where we could sleep in a car if need be. We could sleep in a cardboard box on a corner somewhere. No, we have another little human being here who is relying on us to give him the best that we can give him. He did not ask to be here. That was the scariest part. And I tried to find another position similar to that one, but there just was nothing exactly like a carbon copy of that one on the planet. I loved that job. At any rate, it was scary knowing that I've got this little wonderful child relying on me and my husband. And it was scary just, wow, doing something I'd never done before. I've been speaking since 2001. That was the easy part. And I had a community of followers, if you will, because of all of these faculty development workshops I had done and conferences I had presented at that my team would put on 3 times a year, 4 times a year around the country. I had done that. So the speaking part wasn't scary. It was trying to figure out this business part. I'd never run a business before. Of course, you know, run a household and keep track of expenses, pay bills, so on and so forth. But that's different. You know, what kind of price tag do you put on your speaking? How do you price yourself in a way where you're not selling yourself short, but at the same time, it's a price that people will pay? And trying to understand and navigate that, setting up a website. I hadn't built a website in 20 years. I hadn't done that since nearly 20 years, since around 1999. You know, so building a website or finding somebody to build one, I had no clue what it took to launch a business, but I knew this. I knew other people had done it. I knew they had done it well. And I said, you know what? I don't have to figure it out all on my own. I can figure out as much as I can. And just like I did as a teenager and as a young woman in college, getting ready to go out into the professional world, and the researching and the observation and the introspection, and I could take those and do the same thing again, where I research, I observe, I reach out, I think about what I need to do, but I didn't have to do it alone. And it's so fantastic. I mean, now how it's so much easier to build a network and find people who are already doing what you're trying to do and just ask, may I have 15 minutes of your time to ask a few questions? Or what is your consultation fee? May I have 45 minutes of your time? I've got 5 questions, you know, what do you charge? So investing in your development was huge, or investing in my development was huge in me understanding this, but that was the scary part. Knowing we had a son to support and then not knowing how to build a business from zero.
Yes. Well, I think I was fortunate because my parents were business owners. I grew up in the restaurant business. So I had a foundation of how to run a business. And I'd been managing hospitals for 23 years, so I knew the foundation of business. But I did have a network. So I think that, you know, developing that network, especially for women, I think that a network of women who lift up other women is extremely important to get us where we need to go. And I know that you give presentations for women. One of them, I noticed that you call it the side hustle, that talks about getting, you know, you might be working in a business right now, you might be doing something, but then you're going to create your own personal brand, and you're going to create this side hustle so that if something happens that happened to me, happens to you, you said, I had a following. I knew that people knew me. And I'm like you, I had that same network of connections when it was time to take that leap of faith and jump out into the business world, to call these connections up and say, here's what I'm doing. Help me. help me. And then so many people did, and so many people will give of their time. So how did you just find the right people to reach out to? I mean, obviously you had been, you know, in this kind of publishing business prior to, but tell us exactly what your business does, because there's multiple components to your business.
Fantastic question. So there are different segments to my business. There are three parts to my business. One is the speaking business, where, of course, I do the workshops, the webinars, the keynotes, the trainings, the conference breakout sessions. So there's a speaking part to my business. And then there's also the academy. And at the academy is where I do exactly what you were talking about, that side hustle. I show people from zero to 100, how to launch a successful speaking business. This is the program I wish had been around in 2016 when I was trying to figure it out. And so that is the second part. It's the BMEC Talks Academy, where I show you, if you are an expert in your field, in your industry, if you've been in it for 3 to 5 years, an accountant, a data analyst, a researcher, whatever it is, people will pay you to speak on your expertise. They will. And I show you how to take that expertise in the BMEC Talks Academy and turn it into a profitable side hustle. And you may fall in love with it to the point where it's not a side hustle. You make it a full-time passion. So that's the second arm of the business. The third arm of the business, and this is the one, I love all of them, but this is the one that it was just an obvious choice for me, given how much I loved books as a child. I was the kid in the checkout line at Walmart. We didn't have any fancy stores, population 5019, Debbie, in the checkout line of Walmart. I didn't want chips. I didn't want candy. I didn't want a cookie. I wanted a book. So the third arm of my company was, it was obvious. The writing was on the wall. I had tons of books as a kid, publishing. That's the third arm. Now, my publishing company is not like the one that I worked for, that EdTech company. They do textbooks, they do university and college level material, and it's a very different process. Mm-hmm. With my company, it's an independent publishing company. This is where you are the average person. You have a fabulous story. You have expertise. You want to solidify yourself as a contender in your profession. And you want to put it out there to the world that you do know your stuff. Well, with an independent publishing company, we take your manuscript from just, you know, scrolls and scrolls and lines of words in Microsoft Word into a beautifully published book that is sold on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, .com, Target.com, Walmart.com, right? So those are the three arms of the business: speaking, the academy, and then the publishing company.
Publishing company. Now, so what was your greatest challenge in making this change from being working for a company to having your own company? And then, you know, I would think that finding people to whose books they would ask you to publish for them would be something too. I mean, just building up that reputation that said, you know, this is a successful publishing house.
All of the above, you know, whether it's locating the clients, whether it is getting people to know about you, so getting the word out that you're doing this kind of work, the prospecting that's involved with it, those are the big challenges. But then you gain steam and you gain momentum. Little by little, people find out that that's what you're doing. Oh, that's what you're doing. Oh, that's what you're doing. And they tell others and they tell others and they tell others. And before you know it, it's just taking off. So the biggest challenge is certainly just getting the word out and making it known that this is what you do. And that's what you must do. You must make it very clear what it is you do so people know that's the person they need to go to for X, right? So when it comes to speaking and people are thinking, wow, I need something on communication skills and strategies. I need something to help my sales reps be better presenters when they're going out on customer calls, when they're having to make pitches in front of decision makers. I need someone who can help me with my communication skills on a weekly basis. you think of Bridget. That's what I want you to think of. When you think about, geez, I'm really looking for a great side hustle and I'm an expert, but I just don't know how to get the speaking business idea off of the ground. Or I don't have an idea for a side hustle. What could I do? I want you to think of my academy. And then I need everybody, if you journal, if you blog, if you just have ideas, everybody has a genius, everybody has a story. I want you to also think about, she's got this publishing company. So put yourself out there as to what it is you do so people know that that's who they should contact for X. But that's the biggest challenge. Yeah. Getting people to know what you do and then getting the phone ringing off the hook.
Now, one of the things I do want to go back to that you mentioned that I think is extremely important is knowing your worth and figuring out how much to charge for things. As you know, I'm in the veterinary profession, and one of our challenges is it's fairly low paying compared to the education that goes into it. But as a practice manager, I was highly compensated. And I think that may be my business background. A lot of it had to do with self-confidence and just asking. So as advice to women, particularly when they are talking about their own worth, and any tips that you can give out there to say, this is how you go and ask. This is how you show your worth. This is how you get the guts, right, to go to your boss or to someone who's going to hire you to speak or to do any kind of work and say, here it is, and this is what I'm worth.
And that's it right there. This is what I'm worth, and here's why I am worth this. Always make sure you show up with the why. Always make sure you show up with the supporting evidence. So this is going to require that you do your research and find out, well, what is the going rate? And then bump yourself up a few notches, because guess what? You're worth it. And you cannot, let me tell you, you cannot wait for anybody else to bump you up a few notches. You have to be your own cheerleader. Some people see it as aggressive or even too assertive. I like to think of it as, if you don't do it, then who will, boo? That's how I like to look at it, okay? You don't want to, I was talking to a girlfriend about this in terms of trying to figure out how much to charge for a speaking engagement. You don't want to finish a speaking engagement, get on an airplane and fly home and look at that check and be ticked off that entire flight home. Mm-hmm. You want to know every day you show up to work that you're getting what you are worth. Know what that dollar amount is, ask for it, and then be prepared to show why you deserve it. What are you going to do? What have you done that has gone above and beyond what's on that job description? What is your vision? What challenges and problems are you going to solve as a result? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? What are you wanting to do? Where are you wanting to get to? And just why should the company give you this money, right? Why should they bother? So you got to give them that why. Give them the number and give them the why.
I think we both know that the women and men kind of approach this in a different manner, because men will just ask, even if they're not qualified. A lot of times, somebody laughed the other day and said, it was one of my female friends, and she said Kanye decided he wanted to run for president, even though he had absolutely no qualifications. But she said, this is what women need to do. They just need to say, hey, I'm going to put my name out there for it. And there's a lot of statistics about the fact that women hold themselves back a lot of times. And so, you know, what advice would you give someone who's kind of facing a big career decision, who may be considering changing professions, changing or starting their own business? I mean, being an entrepreneur is certainly, I think, going to be highly likely post-COVID. I think there's going to be a whole lot of people who were maybe working for companies that they had maybe a little side hustle, and this is going to be their next new thing. So what advice would you give to somebody who's making that career choice, looking at being an entrepreneur, looking at starting something that's going to be maybe their passion project. You know, I think you and I both have a great deal of passion for what we do, and that makes our work not so much work for us. It's fun. I really enjoy doing what I'm doing. So what would be your big advice there?
A number of things. One, I have a friend in California, and every time he texts me, I'm working. And his response is, oh, poor Bridget. Oh, when do you get a break? Da, da, da. And my response is, you don't understand. This is not work to me. It is so enjoyable. I'm in a state of flow. Find that something that puts you in a state of flow, where if money was no object, you would still jump out of the bed and run and go do it. Find what that is. That's number one. The second piece of advice is, I want you to, after you find it, I want you to have this mantra in your head: all gas, no brakes. All gas, no brakes. Just hit it hard, because the worst thing anyone can say to you is no. Ask for what you believe you deserve. Put in that proposal, submit that idea. Just do everything you can to grow this passion. And then the third piece of advice is, I don't want you to wake up 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road and say, I wish I had fill in the blank. I don't want you to do that. You don't want to do that to yourself. If it's right there in your mind, if you've been toying with it, if friends or colleagues have said you should do X, do it. Just do it. Tap into your network, tap into your circle. They will help you figure it out. But live life with no regrets. Figure out what is that thing that you would do if you could do it for free and didn't have to worry about finances, and just all in. Don't listen to the naysayers. They're out there. Don't worry about winning over everybody. You are not going to win over everybody all the time. I think about that when I'm speaking. Excuse me. 100% of the audience is not listening at 100% capacity, 100% of the time, with 100% happiness. And because I know that's a fact, and that not 100% of the audience is listening to me at 100% capacity, I'll say it again. 100% of your audience is not tuned in at 100% capacity, 100% of the time, at 100% happiness. You will not be able to make everybody happy. You cannot, you should not bother to do that. The main person you need to make happy is yourself. Go all in. Don't worry about the doubters. Don't worry about, let's say you send something out and you don't get a response. The fortune is in the follow-up. Ping them again. Maybe it slipped through the cracks. Maybe it went to their junk mailbox. Maybe they forgot to respond. Maybe it was on their to-do list. Stay on people's radar, the people that matter. Figure out your target audience and give them what they want. Let me find that quote really quick. I wrote it down. One of my favorite business owners, local business owners, said this when I first met him. I think it was in September of 2017 or 18. Give them what they want, when they want it, and outperform everybody with a smile.
Love that. I love that. I think a lot of times we have fear of failure. And when I'm speaking, a lot of times I will ask my audience, I said, how many of you, when you were a small child, were told by your parents not to stick your finger in the electrical outlet? Well, like 100% of us, for the most part. I went, how many did it anyway? And almost 100% of us had to push the boundary, right? But my question is, how many of you did it after that again? And hopefully no one did, because we learn from failure that that was not an appropriate thing to do. And we learn that going through life too. We learn what works, we learn what doesn't, but we have to keep pushing to see, you know, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? Because life is certainly rapidly changing. And just right now, I know you are a professional speaker and I am too, and all speaking engagements have now become virtual. How do you engage an audience in a virtual conversation when you're a speaker and you're so used to getting the energy back from the audience. And you and I both, we feed off of this. This is the boost to our lives, is when we have that audience in front of us and people are giving us feedback and the heads are nodding and their hands are raising and you're so excited that your message is being received. And now it's coming over to the side in a little chat box. It's not what we love, but I think we are going to have to, again, figure out how to do it, have some failures, and then successfully be able to do this virtually. Have you got any tips for us? Everybody's having a virtual meeting now. What would you say? Let's do this virtually. Let's do it better.
Let me think. When it comes to the virtual environment, this is a really good question. I need everybody to think Texas. I need you to think Texas in terms of your emotions. Turn it up to a 10. I need you to think 10 Texas when it comes to your body language. I need you to think Texas when you have your facial expressions with the intonation of your voice. The way I'm talking right now is not what I would do if you and I were face to face, Debbie, but I have to compensate because of the distance that we have, because of the physical distance that we have. I have to make up for that deficit. And in the virtual environment, that's what we have to do. We have to think Texas. We have to think big. So the big gestures, the big personality, the big energy, bring it. And it feels over the top when you're just sitting in your office all by yourself. There's no one around. It feels strange. It can feel strange, but your audience will love you for it, because your audience is going to love that far more than they are going to love you sitting here and doing this, where you're being nice and reserved and you're nervous about the camera and don't nobody want to see that. Okay, so
this is great.
Let me add this. Just because you have one session that is not fantastic, that's okay. It makes me think about business. It makes me think about life. It makes me think about your profession. If you have a shortcoming, a failure, a misstep, you just learn from that and say, oh, okay, that stinks. Like, I didn't know that my camera was off. Okay, next time I'll know to turn my camera on. Yeah, I didn't know, whatever, that people could see that I have this great top on, but you could also see my shorts or whatever. Okay, let me make sure I adjust my camera, whatever. So learn from the missteps, but don't take them as total failures. They're not.
I love the fact that you're talking about this, because when I wrote an article not too long ago, when COVID first started and all the veterinary hospitals were seeing our clients virtually, or they were in the car, but we all have masks on and a lot of our facial expression is now covered and we are struggling to just communicate with each other because of the mask. So going back to that Texas comment, I'm saying speak with your eyes more, speak with your body more, be a little more exaggerated in that, show you the smiles. You know, we always have those, what are those, like Ducharme slides or whatever. When we smile, show that more. I just think about going around in the grocery store and smiling at people, because I'm one of those people. I'm going to talk to strangers. Yeah, you do. Yeah. So I will smile at people in the grocery store, make a little comment, and make sure that that body language is exaggerated, because we're losing so much of our expressions when we're covering half of our face. And let's face it, that's going to be kind of normal for quite a while.
Right. Well, and let me throw this in very quickly. It may sound silly and you have to do what fits your personality, but I remember recently I was at a store and there was this lady standing near me, she and her husband, and I can't remember what they were doing, but it brought a smile to my face, and I'm just kind of looking at them smiling. So I told the lady, I know you can't tell, but I'm smiling. And so she laughed, but it fits with your personality. Don't even hesitate if you have on a mask to tell a person, by the way, I'm smiling.
By the way, I'm smiling. Exactly.
Well, it just made, you know, all three of us kind of laugh. I said, you know, I'm not just sitting here staring at you. I really am smiling behind this mask.
I really am smiling. This is, I know it seems strange, but I'm not. I do want to talk about the book, Triumph Over Trials, because that one is one that you wrote. I know some of the books are collaborative because I have a chapter in one of your books, on the mic, about being a professional speaker. But tell us about Triumph Over Trials book and, you know, how you wrote that.
Right. Well, with Triumph Over the Trials, this came about when it was obvious we were living in a different world, a different climate. So actually, let me think, how many other young ladies? I think it was five other ladies in my circle. We met via Zoom in mid-April, I think April 15th, April 22nd, and April 29th of 2020. We met on Zoom, and there was a question that we tackled on each one of those sessions, and we sat for an hour. We would talk and catch up with each other, how are you doing, so on and so forth, but then we had this question that laid the foundation for what we were going to type and have in the book. And the book is focused on how the trials may seem big, the challenges seem big in the moment, but when you come out of that trial, when you get past that challenge, when you solve that problem, that light on the other end is so much brighter than any of the darkness, any of the sadness, any of the despair, frustration, weakness that may have come from the trial. The triumph is always, it's hard to see it, it's hard to believe it, it's hard to feel it in the moment because you've lost your job, that relationship has ended, that friendship is not what it once was. It's hard in the moment to see a triumph, but there is one. And it is always going to be on a grander scale than any kind of hiccup or speed bump you could have in the road. And so we all wrote about how we had different challenges or trials in our lives. And what's our one piece of advice for someone who feels like that they just cannot triumph over the trials, and how we triumphed over our trials. So yeah. And it's available, you know, on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, or wherever you like to get your books. But this is it. You see the plant is sprouting out of the rocks. So the triumphs are always going to be greater than the trials.
It surprises people sometimes when I say to them, having cancer was a positive thing for me. And they look at me like I have lost my mind, but I really discovered the goodness in people. I discovered that people cared about me that I didn't even realize, had any clue that I was even alive. For years and years before I moved, I had probably 30 or 40 cards that came from clients that were supportive during the time I was taking chemotherapy. And it really wasn't announced to anyone, but they had asked, you know, and they sent all these cards. And then friends who were there and cooked meals and, you know, just strangers who were, you would just meet even in the oncology room and kind of have go through these trials together. But the perspective that you get, that long-term perspective that says, you know, we all go through things. And this teaches us things that we now are going to take and we're going to move it into what we're dealing with right now. When the pandemic first hit, I did a video for my audience and I said, I know this seems hard, but I want to let you know that I've been through multiple recessions in business. I've had cancer. This is actually my second pandemic, as being old enough to know what was happening, because in 1968, I was alive and we had a pandemic. And of course, then we didn't shelter in place. We had Woodstock instead, but that's a different time in the world. But, you know, through every one of those things, this too shall pass. And you just keep moving forward, thinking with your smart brain and not caving into your limbic fear. And then you do triumph and you come out on the other side. So I think that I love the fact that you wrote a book about that and you've got women involved in it who have been through some trials and tribulations and have advice for coming out the other side. Because we're in the midst of it right now, but I think it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. There's going to be a lot of upheaval and change, but almost with every time historically we have upheaval, there's change for the better. So I think There's going to be a lot of change for the better coming around the bend, and I'm excited to see what happens. I'm not ready to slow down my career yet, and I'm sure you're not either. So we got to get back on a stage and get our audiences back sometime soon, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
So Bridget, thank you gosh so much for your time. I just want to know if you have any final words of wisdom to folks out there who are looking to launch their career or manage their bend in the road.
Absolutely. Listen, you are smarter, stronger, fiercer than you think you are. And you can do this. This is not just some little cliche that I'm giving you because it sounds great. You can. I don't come from a background where I have all of this wonderful support. I don't come from a family that is just brimming over with money or advice or experiences that they can share with me to help me understand this journey that I'm on right now. And you can figure this out. You have more to offer than you know. And you're doing the world a disservice and yourself if you don't do it. If you don't take that passion and put it out there so that you are impacting your community, your city, your state, your world, you must do it. You are brighter, stronger, bolder, fiercer than you realize. I need you to know that. I know that. I haven't even met you, and I know that. You've got it in you. I need you to do it. And listen, if you want to connect with me, talk more, unpack your vision, visit connectwithb.com. Connect with B as in Bridget. connectwithb.com. Would love, love, love to have a conversation with you. You've got this. You've got it.
Thank you so much, Bridget. And thank you for joining me on The Bend. You have really been inspirational, and I love the energy that you're bringing to this conversation. Of course, we'll put all your information, your website, and how to get in touch with you at the end of the podcast for our audience to connect with you. And I'm sure you and I are going to stay in touch because we have such a good time when we talk to each other. Even though, like I said, one day us two Southern girls are going to meet in person.
Yes.
And we'll just have a y'all fest, right? Because that's
yes!
what I do. Sometimes I laugh and I say, especially when I go up north, I don't think it really matters what I say as long as I continue to talk, because the people like that Southern accent. So thank you again, Bridget, so much for joining us, and we will see you next time on The Bend.
Thank you, Debbie.